So the next day, Srila Prabhupada announced that he was leaving. He had been 4 months in London, and this was the longest time up to that time that he'd ever stayed in any one location, because the movement was in its dynamic period of growth and he was always moving around. But he stayed with us 4 months that first time. And then we all became very saddened because we knew Prabhupada had to leave us again. But the work went on in London. This same winter, end of 69, and beginning of 70, we recorded the second record, Govindamadi Purusham, which became another big hit record, and an album, the first album. And even though Prabhupada wasn't with us, he was still guiding us almost every day by letters. This is your cue.
Finally.
He finally gets to read his letter.
Los Angeles, 15th March, 1970. Then London. My dear Gurdas, please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter dated 8th March, 1970. At first, I must thank you very much for your slides and the viewer, which I enjoy whenever I find some time. The pictures of London Temple immediately get me there, and I enjoy your company, so I can understand that everything is going on well in London Temple. The service of the Lord should be so nicely executed that Radharani will bestow upon you blessings. Raising her right hand palm, you have got a very nice wife, a devotee, and intelligent. So both husband and wife combined together, please see that the temple service is being executed regularly and nicely, and thus make your lives happy and successful. Side by side, both of you should train your junior brothers and sisters in the service of the Lord, so that in case both of you go for preaching work, the scheduled program of the temple may not be hampered. We should follow two important lines, namely the Pancharatriki Vidhi as well as the Bhagavat Vidhi. The Bhagavat Vidhi is preaching work and Samkirtan, and Pancharatriki Vidhi is temple worship of the deities. The temple worship will keep us sanctified, and when we shall preach in sanctified pure heart, the preaching will be immediately effective. So we have to follow the two parallel lines simultaneously for successful execution of devotional service. Regarding George Harrison, I am sure he will improve now in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is developed only by service, so he has very willingly and gladly served Krishna in many ways. The recent Govinda record, which your good wife has sung along with you, is certainly super excellent, and it has become so nice because of George's attention upon it. So whenever this nice boy comes to our temple, please receive him very nicely. Give him prasadam, and if possible, talk with him about Krishna, and thus he will advance more and more in Krishna consciousness. When I remember all of you in London, as well as George Harrison, I become very happy because the combination is very much hopeful. I am very glad to learn that George has said, I don't want to make nonsense records anymore. This version of George I consider very valuable. His popularity and his great talent can be very nicely utilized by producing such nice records as Govinda instead of producing something nonsense. In our Vaishnava literature, there are hundreds and thousands of nice, purposeful songs, and if these songs under George's supervision are recorded, I think it will bring a great revolution in the record-making business. So when he says that he does not wish to produce nonsense, this does not mean that he has to close his business. On the other hand, he will get greater opportunity for producing the finest transcendental record songs, which are still unknown to the world. When you meet him again, you can talk with him what I am speaking to you in this letter. My special thanks are due to your good wife, Srimati Jamuna Devi. Her singing songs of Krishna consciousness and Krishna will certainly bless her and you all. Please offer my blessings to all the boys and girls and be happy. You will be pleased to know that Achyutananda is also doing very nicely in Calcutta. He is moving in very enlightened circles of Calcutta, and somebody is giving us a plot of land worth 80,000 rupees for constructing a temple there. When the temple is constructed, I shall ask you to go there with your wife and preach Krishna consciousness amongst the Indian community. Sometimes you desire to go to India, and Krishna will fulfill your desire to a greater extent. Krishna's service is so nice. Keep this faith always in mind and serve regularly. Your life will be sublime. Hope this meets you in good health. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. P.S. Please send more beautiful slides in plain cardboard frames.
As the archivist, my comments would be, that was the month, March. You said March?
Yes.
1970. George began writing the songs and putting together the songs, recording the songs for All Things Must Pass album, which he finished in June of that year. We were living out at his house at that time. And remember, we never saw George. He was always gone. That's what he was doing. He was recording the All Things Must Pass album, which is the greatest collection, the first triple album ever produced that went platinum, all songs about Krishna. So what Prabhupada was saying in that letter came to fruit. And then to the final part of your letter, Prabhupada was thinking already about India. And by August of that 1970 year, we were all together with Srila Prabhupada again in India.
I want to back up a bit during the time in London, because when Prabhupada came in from the John Lennon estate, he didn't immediately move into he started to live in the temple, but it was difficult. So we got him an apartment on Baker Street, which was near a very famous landmark called Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. And most of us were living, a few brahmacharis lived in the temple, but those of us who were grihasthas would live together in different flats in different places. So I remember I was living out in Golders Green with another couple that had come, Ishana Bibhavati and their child. Someone else would, Devadatta and Draupadi and Dhruvananda, the three of us lived there. And I would come in every day by the underground to cook for Srila Prabhupada. So this place was kind of like a nice place compared to what we had been getting in the past. It actually had a doorman and carpets in the hallway. I remember that. And I remember going one day, I had to be there early, around 7 o'clock, so I went there one day, and I noticed that the door was slightly ajar. And for some reason, it made me feel a little nervous, because the door was never open. So I was hesitant a little bit to go in, and I suddenly heard, "Malati, is that you? Come in, come in." He said, "We are watching TV, come and watch." And I walked in, and it was a furnished place, so there was a little black and white TV that came with it. And he said, "They say they are going to the moon. Let us watch and see." So I was preparing the breakfast, going in and out and watching, and then it came time for the so-called launching. And we watched that big explosion. We watched the thing happen. And then Srila Prabhupada, he just turned around and very calmly and very matter-of-factly, he said, "They did not go to the moon." And then he said, "Now you can turn off the idiot box. It has made idiots out of us." But there was myself and Jai Hari, Dhananjaya was there, and the servant Purushottam, the one who was also there when Prabhupada threw the flower at my daughter. So after this event, he became so disturbed in his mind, and he said, but we saw them, they went to the moon. And Prabhupada said, no, they did not go. And he just could not accept the words of his spiritual master. And as a result of that critical mentality, he unfortunately fell away. So that was one event that had happened during that time in London. And Gurudas is reading one letter from March 1970. So Srila Prabhupada's, you know, departure to California, it did left us feeling very vacant, even though suddenly we are now there with Radha and Krishna, and there were so many devotees. For that installation, devotees came from Amsterdam, from France, from Germany, from all over England. Even devotees came from America. So there was, you know, a packed house, as you can say. It was very full, plus the devotees we had been making by going out on regular Harinam down Oxford Street. So I had written one letter, and he replied. This was March 6, 1970. And he said, please accept my blessings. I am in due receipt of your letter dated 17th February, 1970. And have read the contents carefully. I'm so glad to hear from you after so long time. It is not surprising that you feel the competition of Maya very keen, because we are in the midst of an ocean of Maya, just as if when you are in the ocean, you say, oh, there is water all around. That is the ocean. So you must have a boat very strong, and Krishna is the nicest boat to carry you over the ocean of Maya. The ocean will reduce to become a pit left by the hoof of a cow by the grace of Krishna, and it may be crossed over without any care. And after crossing the ocean, the devotee shall go to the abode of Krishna, where there is no more danger. That is the mission of our life, and that is Krishna consciousness. I am very happy to know that your daughter Saraswati is growing up nicely under your care. To see that the child is raised in full Krishna consciousness is the proper management of householder life. And when your good daughter is no longer to be cared for by you, then you will get enough time to chant Hare Krishna. Both mother and daughter can sit together and chant Hare Krishna. Regarding your thoughts of Grand Rath Yatra Festival, this year there must be a very grand procession of Rath Yatra. So this is 1970, and you've heard what happened in 69 when the car fell apart. So this year there must be a grand procession of Rath Yatra. And ask Shamsundar to introduce George to come, to induce George to come in the procession. Shamsundar has asked me to go there. So if I'm not very seriously engaged, I must go. But if George and John join in the procession, it will be a great success. I have heard how the new devotees are all executing their devotional services very enthusiastically and with sincerity and humility. Yes, I have asked them to take instruction from you, one of their elder god sisters. Whatever you have learned, you are one of the old students. Whatever you have gathered by experience, you must hand over to them, the new students. This is called parampara. Please offer my blessings to Saraswati Dasi. Will you send her to our school in New Vrindavan when she is a little older? The school is developing nicely there under the headmastership of Hari Griva Prabhu. Hope this meets you in good health. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. And then in his writing, P.S. Please inform Shamsundar that I have received his letter and record also. And then he initialed it again.
So, in the process of registering the society, we had this meeting arranged upstairs in the office room. We went to the Theosophical Society nearby to borrow some chairs. We had engaged a solicitor, that means a lawyer, an attorney, who was the Prime Minister's attorney. And Lord Goodman's firm. Mr. French, who was complaining, he said our kirtans disturbed him, and his wife was fainting, and his little dog was jumping up and down and barking. Now, we claimed, I mean, we tried to soundproof it. You tried, but his apartment was just adjacent to the wall outside of the
temple room. Just outside the temple room.
Yeah, outside the temple room. So we borrowed these chairs from the Theosophical Society and went up to the office. Now, the building was, what's it called, zoned for two caretakers. Two caretakers, but by this time there was about 30 or 40 devotees, men and women. And Prabhupada also later said that this temple is like a family. And you and Jamuna are mother and father. It is not artificial. That is why there is no mixing between men and the women who are just in the same building. So it had a very nice atmosphere, but still, when we would do our morning program, this Mr. French was complaining to the Greater London Council, and this might hold up our registration and etc. In the temple room, in the temple door was a window. You could see inside.
Round
window. So, we're all up in the office, and Mr. French said, "This is not soundproofed. I can hear it in the morning." And so he had everybody come down into the hall. Mr. Dreiberg had also, the MP, had written a letter. So Dan and Jaya and I came up with, maybe he did, I don't remember, but we came up with a plan that when you open the door, we would be chanting. We were chanting in the temple. And now all these officials were there and the two solicitors. And so when we opened the door, we'd be chanting.
Loudly.
And so when they closed the door, it was like this. And the people were doing the mridangas. And when we closed the door, it was like this, but we weren't really playing. It was like. And so they saw through the door that we were going like this. So Mr. French was very angry. We go upstairs.
Now, wait a minute. There, we went down into Mr. French's apartment also, and we had a series of signals set up with the people upstairs that when they were supposed to be chanting, they would be faking it.
Right. So they said, "We can't hear it in there either." So then we all go upstairs, and Mr. French is still sputtering. He's angry. And he says, "It's a bloody trick." His solicitor, who happened to be the French, the fencing champion, Olympic fencing champion of England, didn't want Mr. French to leave because he was trying to make some progress. So Mr. French says, "It's a trick." This solicitor does like a fencing parry and says, "Just when we come to the crunch, you're leaving."
You're bolting.
And Mr. French says, "You're bloody right." And he goes and he takes the doorknob and it falls off. So now he's stuck there and he pried open the door. As he did this, 30 sleeping bags came out. It was supposed to be for two caretakers, but they passed us and gave us the permission.
Actually, during this time of Bury Place, the Harinam Sankirtan Yajna was very strongly focused on a daily basis. And Prabhupada actually gave a formula for success. There was five-pronged formula, which was, remember, it was book distribution, prasadam distribution, festivals, Harinam Sankirtan, and deity worship. So at the, and he said that these five things together will offset the pernicious effect of Kali Yuga and will enable the heart to be successful in keeping Kali away. So these five things were going on. This, we were now distributing books, distributing prasadam. There was Harinam Sankirtan daily. There were festivals, and there was deity worship. So it was like every aspect of success was being carried out in the Buri Place Temple. And wonderful, wonderful devotees were joining. We've heard Dhananjaya's name. Tribhuvanath Prabhu is another really great pioneer of Krishna consciousness. He was the epitome of the holy name, the epitome of enthusiasm. He was the most non-critical personality you could ever hope to meet. He had the ability to actually see and draw out the good in any living entity who came in contact with him. I don't know of anybody who could ever be angry with Tribhuvanath. Well, there's Narayan, but he could be angry at anybody. But he was an extraordinary personality who also came through at that time. And Tribhuvanath took it heart and soul to see that the devotees went out daily on Harinam, and they would go out in the morning and come back for some lunch. They'd go out again, come back for a little dinner, and for the evening arti. And then after that, about 8 o'clock, they would go out again.
Three times
a day, Harinam was going on in London. And people were coming to the temple as a result. And as a result of coming to the temple, people were joining the temple. So as a result, the temple itself was becoming overflowing with devotees, and there was not room for them. So then the talk began about that we actually needed more space. We had gotten this building, 5 floors. We thought this was massive. But by the execution of the Harinam Sankirtan Yajna and the other devotional activities, this building had suddenly itself also become too small. So this is when the talk started in about getting a place in the country where we could have a place where the thinking was Grihastras could live there, they could develop some kind of industry, and the Buri Place would be the main preaching focus. That was kind of how the early concept was going on.
And so, Mondakini and Jyotirmayi and Hilavati, is it?
Yeah, these...
Three came from France.
Three young women from France came over during this time, and they were on their way to India. They were going to go to India to find a guru. So, of course, we were preaching to them, you don't need to go to India to find a guru. Our spiritual master is coming, and he is an adequate guru. He is the perfect guru. So they postponed their trip. They thought, well, let's just see what they're talking about. And their trip became permanently postponed, and they became Ilavati, Jyotirmayi, and Mondakini. And each one of them, in their own unique way, excelled in Krishna consciousness. Jyotirmayi married Yogeshwara, who also came over. He was an American, but he was in France doing some kind of studies. So he also came. In fact, I remember him coming down the stairs to the prasadam room on his first visit to London. And I happened to be there cleaning, so I offered him some prasadam. And he said that as a result of that prasadam, he was immediately inclined never to leave this place or never to leave Krishna consciousness. And Mondakini was a very naturally transcendental personality. And she was like an angel. Actually, she still is like an angel. She's just so beautiful, you know, from within, from without. And during this time of the, we were doing different Harinams, it happened that sometimes we would get rousted by the bobbies or the police. So we had this plan that involved Gurudas using his camera to show how the police were harassing us. And we made a plan to go down to Piccadilly in the evening, which was when we usually got harassed. And the plan was when the police would come, which they would do, all of the devotees would drop down on their knees. And Gurudas would run off from a distance and photograph the police harassing the devotees. And I was supposed to run away because I had the baby, and it wouldn't look so good to have the baby in jail. So this exactly happened. The police came. I ran away. Gurudas backed off. And one of the pictures he took was Mondakini looking up like this and the two big policemen dragging her away. And it was just such an incredible picture, and it was printed in the paper, you know. And after that particular incident, you know, the judge was saying, so what is this? What is going on here? And the policemen who had made the charges were very adamant against these, you know, we were making such a disturbance and we were disturbing society and peace. And someone said, well, Your Honor, actually, they're just chanting the names of God. And he was, what are you doing? And then the devotees explained. And so then he admonished the arresting officers. He threw the case out, admonished the arresting officers. And from that point forward, practically speaking, we had no further major problems with the police in performing Harinam Sankirtan in London.
They chased you down the street, didn't they? The Bobbies trying to get his camera away.
What Malaji Prabhu said was correct. I'd just like to expand a little on it. We were in a line of two, so we were pairs. And we put Mondakini and, I guess, Hilavati in the front. Mondakini was always looking towards the sky anyway, like Lord Chaitanya. He was always. So Tamal Krishna, for some reason, had this carmy-looking hat, you know, like a businessman's hat, a fedora.
When he came into England, because when devotees from America would come to England, we told them they had to dress up in straight clothes. We didn't use the word karmic clothes in those days. I still don't use it myself now. But anyways, we'd say you have to dress up looking straight, meaning like everybody else. So he had this kind of overcoat and this hat that Gurudas is talking. Mukunda actually had a bowler hat. A bowler hat is one of those
Mr. Long.
Those kind of like hats that the British gentlemen wear, and a long overcoat. And when he'd have to do some kind of, you know, legal type of business or some kind of business where we would have to meet with a certain clientele, he'd wear this overcoat and this bowler hat, and he'd look like a proper British gentleman. So when Tamal Krishna came in, he looked like a proper American gentleman with his hat and, you know, a proper coat.
So this is my disguise, and the plan was to, they would drop down, and so these hulking policemen over them looked like they were harassing us. So it was a very good photograph. Meanwhile, I had said that while they were doing this, as many devotees should disperse, because we had a system in Soho of one-way streets where the police cars couldn't go. We would go down the wrong way, and so many of the devotees were able to escape. And they actually stopped us in Shaftesbury Avenue on the way to the temple. So Yogeshwara and I were arrested, and we spent the night in jail. And so when the case came to trial, they were admonishing at first that we were causing obstruction at Piccadilly Circus. So I said, well, we're chanting the holy name of the Lord and we're not wanting to obstruct. And I said, if the police were so adept at their job, why didn't they arrest us all? And if they were so adept at their job, why didn't they arrest us in Piccadilly? Why did they wait to Shaftesbury Avenue? It's on the way back to the temple. And the judge is looking over his bifocals and saying, is this true, Officer Derek? And the policeman would say, yes, yes. So the judge was seeing that this is really not a case. But he had to get the last words in. And he said, must you parade in your costumes on the footpath? So I said, these are not costumes, these are robes that represent the Lord, just like your robes represent the law. And he said, quite, case dismissed.
Well, Another thing that we used to do was take on the evening Harinam party was go to the Shaftesbury Theater. And at the time, there was a drama called Hair, H-A-I-R, not H-A-R-E. And but this Hair was a kind of a representation of the free spirit of the time. And at the end of the play, they actually chanted Hare Krishna. Now, that was good, but what they did when they chanted Hare Krishna was a little unusual. They took off all their clothes, and up on the stage, they would be these naked actors and actresses chanting Hare Krishna. But nonetheless, the Hare Krishna mantra was actually being chanted. So we would go outside of this theater, and before the performance and after the performance, and the real Hare Krishnas with our clothes on would chant Hare Krishna and pass out invitations and pamphlets. So we take advantage of the situation to further promote the cause of Krishna consciousness.
And I think one of the people in the play joined, the blonde girl, remember? She was one of the actresses and she liked us and she joined, yeah.
Well, chronologically, we're at a point where Prabhupada requested the leaders in London to meet him in India and start up the Krishna consciousness movement in Bombay. So,
well, actually, he sent this letter with 11 names, and the 11th name was Miss Saraswati. And he requested us, as you say, to meet him in Bombay. But he said, to begin the World Sankirtan Movement. And he had capitalized this World Sankirtan Movement. This was capitalized.
That was August 1970? August, I believe, 1970. So we could describe our arrival and our activities in Bombay tomorrow morning, if it's a logical time. We worked out a little program with Sridhanath earlier. So we'll spend a couple of hours tomorrow talking about the first days in Bombay, because that's the most relevant.
They have, what is your... you're having a program also earlier? Or
this is a real free... This is just like the old days. Free form. One thing we could ask, maybe if anybody has any questions about the early days in London, or any stories they want to hear.
Maharaj, you mentioned something about coal and potatoes.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Prabhupada was seeing these buildings with the X's on the windows, and they were for rent before the building was finished. And so he said this economy is not healthy, coal and potatoes. That was his description of Britain. Coal and potatoes. I don't know.
But Prabhupada, he would often make little comments like that about England. For, you know, he also said it was a hellish place because it was always cold, dark, damp, and moist.
But he also said that there are only two places in the planet where a gentleman can live, England and India. And he said that England in the summer was just like gold.
Thank you. At the time that the Radha Krishna Temple album was being released, I believe Srila Prabhupada also mentioned in the letter that we will also see about your book, Swamiji. So will this book finally be released?
Well, I wrote this book 15 years ago, and there's a Torchlight Press who has been dragging their feet over the last 5 years. Shamasunda actually edited it in a wonderful way because he knows this feeling. It's very poetic. It's all of these stories and more about Prabhupada. And so the last I heard, they were placing the photos and doing another edit. I don't know why. I guess the tightening. But what I would like is for, maybe you have their address or email, but everybody here write Torchlight Press and say, where is Gurudas's book? Because I've been waiting.
Tomorrow we'll give you the email for Torchlight Press. And when, as soon as you get back to Bombay or your respective residence, hit your computers.
So I wrote that there's a gathering of 1,800 people who want to read this book before I left again, but they've been dragging. It's all of this nectar. And
there's literally a couple of hundred stories in there of intimate stories about that Gurudas has told about Prabhupada's pastimes that he witnessed himself. So it's a very valuable document.
And we had talked about this book. We wanted to call it Swamiji. And I wanted to go with Prabhupada and make a poem every day, like the Chaitanya Chaitamatra, that I could accompany you everywhere and write in verse what you do. But Prabhupada said, no, you should go and preach. So this is long overdue. I wrote in the introduction how Prabhupada and I did discuss this book. And perhaps if you're so kind and you do prod them, maybe they'll finish it up. Because it's very poetic writing as well as these stories. Okay. Weren't all young devotees like you were drafted for Vietnam War? That's a very good question. I'd like to start the answer. I was in the civil rights movement in the United States, which is having to do with the injustice for black people, how they were mistreated. And so I was working as a revolutionary down in the South and the North of the United States, and I was getting beaten and in jail for my beliefs. Sometimes they would throw cherry bombs at us, these little firecrackers. My friend lost her eye, as close as Malati is to me. And so a person, Stokely Carmichael, the late Stokely Carmichael, he was a famous revolutionary. We decided we're not going to go and get drafted. We're going to fight it. So I was called to the draft, but I had a plan to appear crazy, which wasn't a far stretch. And the idea is that they don't want to give this person a gun because he's crazy. So at every turn, everything that they did, I had a counter proposal. Like I had the colorblind letter and the not colorblind letter, and at everything that they did in the physical, I would do something different. So finally, the psychiatrist interviewed me, and he said, "Do you take drugs?" And so I said, "I don't want to answer that." Instead of saying yes or no. And although I didn't do this, one of the things that heroin addicts do is scratch their palms like this. So I did that, but I didn't take heroin, but I did that as a subtle acting thing. And then he said, and he was a German psychiatrist. He said, "Are you a homosexual?" And I said, "I don't want to answer that." So by lunchtime, they had kicked me out of the draft board. So, yes, many people were called to the Vietnam War, but I decided I didn't want to fight people that I didn't know for some political, whimsical reasons. So you can use your version.
What's the other question?
About the matter, but that comes later.
Excuse me?
About the matter, but that comes later.
Oh, what is it about the matter?
They want to know, can you tell us how it was established?
Oh, okay. There's a question about Bhaktivedanta Manor here. But that actually came a little bit later.
After we went to India.
Yeah. At the time that Prabhupada called for us to leave to India, Malati and I and a couple of other devotees were living out with George at his new estate in Oxfordshire and doing a lot of the clearing of the grounds and the gardening work. And it was obvious we needed a new temple, a new grounds, a new space for the expansion of Krishna consciousness in England. But as per the usual relationship, I never wanted to ask George for anything. So I only subtly hinted when we would talk out at his place that we were really getting crowded in Berry Place. And it took a number of months and years then for him to decide to get us Bhaktivedanta Manor. It happened in 1971 or two, a couple of years later. And I don't know. It's a long story. I don't think it's that relevant right now.
But I learned something about the manor I didn't know before. Malati's Prabhu has a lot of questions for her. But when we were recently in England, we were talking about the manor, and Samashinda was explaining how this woman had gutted, taken everything out from inside the manor. So he, Samashinda, had to take things from all the rooms to make the temple room. And because of the sawdust, apparently a fire had started. So the fire brigade came and put out the fire. But then it was time for the fire yajna. What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. Now we're jumping. Okay, but since you brought it up, what happened was this. At the manor, we were living in a mansion, you know, this huge mansion. A bunch of young people under 20 years old, without any money, without any transportation, to get to London itself, because the manor is at least a 40-minute ride away. And we were basically on the oatmeal and carrot diet. Carrots because you could go down to the vegetable place and find discarded carrots, you know, profuse amounts of them every morning. And oatmeal because you could buy a sack of it really cheap. And basically we figured out every conceivable way of cooking oatmeal and carrots, to the point, though, we just couldn't even stand to look at them anymore. And I had come back from India at this time. They were in India. We were all in India when the manor was actually secured. And I came back at Prabhupada's request. And I had brought with me Gornitai deities. So I started feeling like we needed something to hold us together, to give us some focus, because it was, you know, the difficulty of the circumstance. And I had the idea that perhaps we should install the deities right away, even though there was no real preparation. And I conferred with the person who was at the time like our resident sannyas, our resident traveling sannyas, Rebati Nandana Maharaj, and he agreed this was probably a good idea. So we were there was some enthusiasm generated, you know, the Gornitai was coming. And a bunch of the women who were now there, they got together and they began to sew. Others went into town every day to collect. And it started to make a focus. We had a purpose there. So on the night before the installation, as usual, everybody, before there's a big event, you know, there's nothing is ever completed. So there's always the all-night staying up and getting it done at the last-minute yajna. So we stayed up all night in the sewing room that was overlooking the part of the manor that comes from, which was the kitchen at the time, over to the second part where the temple room was going to be. And in the morning, when the sun came up, the sun started coming up, caused like mist to rise from the roof. But so we were seeing this, you know, the mist was rising from the roof, but after a while the sun was up and the mist was still rising. And so then I thought maybe, you know, it seemed a little strange that the sun was up, quite up, and the mist was still rising. And we ran down into the kitchen, and indeed there was a fire. So we called the fire department, and they came out to extinguish the fire. And it was due to some faulty thing in the chimney. So a little later, you know, in the same morning, now we're assembled in which is now the theater room, but at that point in time it was our temporary temple room, and we had the deity installation, which was including a fire yajna. So everybody's jammed in this room, and it's full of smoke, and it's banked by windows on one side. I looked at the windows, and here was the men who had the fire department men. They had come back to make a report and an assessment. And now they're looking in the window, and they're seeing us in a room with a big fire blazing. And, you know, needless to say, the looks on their face was completely incredulous. And I had to go out and try to explain to them it wasn't what they thought, what they were probably thinking, that this was actually a very contained fire, that a previous fire was a real fire. We don't go around lighting fires in the house. You know, but it was really, it was, you know, kind of hilarious, but it was really very awkward, because if they gave a negative report, we wouldn't get any insurance to cover the damage, and it was considerable damage. A part of the roof had to be replaced. So it was funny, but it was also very, you know, slightly intense situation.
But we did light a fire at one of our concert programs in the roundhouse, which they pulled out from it. They pulled the fire out.
There's a question. Could you say something about Srila Prabhupada's relationship with George? I heard he wanted to get initiation. Is it true? Srila Prabhupada's relation with George was the rare most type. It was the pure devotee with one of his great disciples, one of his great followers. Single-handedly, George Harrison did more than any one single devotee in spreading Krishna consciousness around the world. And Prabhupada's relationship with George was more like a father and son relationship than a master and disciple. Although George always treated Srila Prabhupada with absolute reverence and humility, watching the two of them exchange talks and conversations was like watching two very old souls interacting. It was so totally unique. George did ask a number of times. He would ask me, he would ask Prabhupada even directly, should he shave his head and become a disciple, wear the robes, take the vows, because he was already practicing the restrictions, the principles of Krishna consciousness. Should he make it formal? He was always worried that if he did that, it may do more harm than good, because then Hare Krishna might become associated with a cult, as a cult. So Prabhupada said, no, you remain in your position, carry on your career in spreading Krishna consciousness in a subtle way, but don't need to take the formal discipleship from me. You just spread Krishna consciousness as best you can. And that way, George kept from being assigned into a niche as a Hare Krishna, and he could reach a much wider audience. Even up to the end, George was conscious of Krishna. Through all the years since Prabhupada left us, George practiced Krishna consciousness. You always see him in photos, even through the 80s and the 90s, with his neck beads. His wife said that, told me that he always was gone in the morning, that she couldn't expect him before about 10, 11 in the morning, because he was chanting his rounds in his small temple that he made for himself, Krishna temple. So the relationship was eternal with Srila Prabhupada and George. And at the end, George requested myself and Mukunda Maharaj to be with him in the year 2000, when he passed. And at that time, he was listening to Krishna. He was listening to Prabhupada's tapes of chanting, Prabhupada's Hare Krishna chanting tapes when he passed. And he was looking at a big set of Radha and Krishna deities at the foot of his bed, all nicely dressed. So George left in a Krishna conscious mood. And that was the relationship. And I'm sure he and Prabhupada are sitting there somewhere now, having some sort of play together. George was one of the great, great, great souls. Prabhupada's greatest disciple. Hare Bol, all glories to George Harrison.
Could you please tell us more about Saradhya Mataji? So Saradhya Prabhu, as Prabhupada would call his ladies, he didn't call us Mataji. He instructed us, actually. He gave instruction. Gurudas can attest to this. He said that we should call each other Prabhu. He said this to a room of men and women, and he instructed his men and women to call each other Prabhu. And he said, not that you should become Prabhu, but you should see all others as Prabhu. And he did not call us Mataji. In fact, you can see in letters and where he has written so-and-so Prabhu. When Vishakha was first in India, he used to call her, she wasn't initiated, so he would call her Jean. Jean was her name, Jean Prabhu. So this Mataji is something that most of us early disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we don't like it so much because Prabhupada didn't call us that. He gave us the names Malati Devi Dasi. So we like the names that Prabhupada gave us, and we don't so much appreciate having something else tacked on. And then specifically because he did give this specific instruction, then we appreciate following that particular instruction. So I've been asked about Saradhya. I would like to say a few things about her. I've already told you how she came as a young girl under a difficult circumstance. And Prabhupada gave immense affection to her. At one point, she was asking a question, and Prabhupada appreciated the question so much, before he answered it, he said, just see how this young girl, she wants Krishna so much. Just see. And then he answered the question, and he said, if you like, when Krishna is pleased, he will kiss you. And then he told her, just like when you see a flower, that is Krishna smiling. So he gave her very, very much attention and affection. When we went to Montreal on our way to London, she was coming with us, and it would be decided there whether she would continue with us to London or go on to Boston. As it turned out, because in Boston, Jadarani was based, and she was beginning the art department, and Saradhya had some interest in art. So it was decided, not so much in the favor that because of Boston, but what happened when she arrived in Montreal, she met one young man named Vaikunthanath, and her heart became a little tweaked. So I remember she came to me and she said, I think I want to marry Vaikunthanath. And so she said, what should I do? I said, well, we better ask Prabhupada. So Prabhupada called in Vaikunthanath and he said, do you want to marry Saradhya? She is a very excellent devotee. So Vaikunthanath was a little flustered. Vaikunthanath had a special rasa with Prabhupada. He'd follow him around. He would go to airports without a penny in his pocket, and somehow he'd get on the same plane that Prabhupada was on, and if he didn't get on the same plane, he'd be on the next plane. But wherever Prabhupada went, his shadow was Vaikunthanath. So Vaikunthanath, when Prabhupada asked him this, coming from Prabhupada, he agreed, yes, you know. But Prabhupada said, first she has to train a little bit in her art, and then she will, you know, later I will marry you. So she went to Boston, and we went to London, and she trained under Jadarani. And actually, she's a very, very fine artist. One of her pictures of Srila Prabhupada is still hanging somewhere in the manor. she did one of her early paintings for the manor, because later on she and her husband joined us there. She did the Rasa Lila dance. And to this day, she produces very fine, fine quality Krishna conscious art. Now, after her marriage to Vaikunthanath, they were sent by Srila Prabhupada. Well, whether Prabhupada sent them, that they requested to go, and he agreed. So they went to Trinidad. Trinidad is a small island near the tip of South America. And they were the first Hare Krishna devotees to ever go there. Now, in Trinidad, it's kind of a mixed situation. There's a lot of people from India trying to get to America or South America ended up in Trinidad. But they're not extremely culture type of persons. They are mixed with the native people. And so they are Hindus of a sort, but there's a large percentage of them there, and they're very sweet people. There's also black people there who were victims of shipwrecks coming from when the slave trade was going on. The ships would quite often wreck, and Trinidad was an oasis for shipwrecked people. So you have these black people. And then in addition, there are people that are natives of South America, coming from like an Indian origin. So this type of ethnic mixture is there in Trinidad. But the mood of the people there is generally very sweet in general. But there are some exceptions, which I'll explain. When they first arrived, after being there briefly, there was an interesting thing that happened. Saradhya had gotten second initiation along with all of us in Boston. Vaikunthanath still did not have Brahman. So Prabhupada wrote a letter to them, and he told Vaikunthanath, you may accept Brahman initiation from your wife, Saradhya. And he gave instructions how she should initiate him into Brahminical initiation. So he actually received Brahman initiation from Srila Prabhupada via his wife. They got a place to live outside of the main city. Whatever, I don't know the name of the main city there, but they were staying there. And to travel, they would come on bus. They didn't have any personal transportation. And they were in a little isolated region. Every day they'd go into town. They'd do Harinam Sankirtan. They would try to distribute books. They would try to get people interested in Krishna consciousness. And then they'd return to their little house, which was isolated. One night they came back. And when they came into their house, they were suddenly surrounded by five men with weapons, guns and knives. And these five men held both of them captive, and they systematically raped Saradhya. A letter was sent to Srila Prabhupada. The next day, she was sent back to New York, and he stayed behind. And a report was sent to Srila Prabhupada. And at the time, Srila Prabhupada was in Delhi. He was up on his roof and taking a massage. And sometimes during his massage, he would glance through the mail. So he received this letter. He became very grave. And I was cooking in a corner of the roof, and I saw tears coming from Srila Prabhupada's eyes. And then he informed me of the incident that had happened. So this young girl, she was not even 20 years old, had gone with her husband to serve Srila Prabhupada to open the mission in Trinidad. And this had happened to her. But nonetheless, in spite of what happened, the mission went on in Trinidad and is still existing today. But she gave more than her life to this mission. And she is now living in Illinois. And as I said, she's a very, very excellent painter, and she's still producing devotional art. And she has one daughter, and that daughter has two children. So she's a grandmother. Actually, she was a grandmother before I was. So that is the report about Saradhya.
We're getting a ton of questions here.
Here's one. Were they aware of your activities in London? What was their reaction? Well, my mother passed away when I was 7, but my father was still present, and he loved Krishna consciousness because in the South, in the civil rights movement, I was getting beaten and in jail, and my days on the Lower East Side and in San Francisco was not so wholesome. So Krishna consciousness actually was a wholesome alternative. And I remember one time on Samkirtan, people were making fun of us, and my father stopped them and said, "That's my son, don't do that." And he very much liked Krishna consciousness, even when his shoes were stolen at a temple one day, he still did. And it, so much so that when we were with George, he wanted to sell his house, and he even wrote a letter, "Do you think George might buy my house?" So he was very happy with my activities in Krishna consciousness. And my brother was taking transcendental meditation, and I was bringing him to Prabhupada in New York. And my brother, I said, "We're going to see Srila Prabhupada." He didn't know that this meant Prabhupada. He just thought it was a name or this or that. So I remember we went in the room, and it was a very long room, and it was sort of like the slave from across the seas is coming to see the king, you know. He was completely taken when he saw Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada told him that you're liberated by your brother's activities in Krishna consciousness. So my whole family supported me.
One very important question just came across in my hands. It said, all of, referring to the three of us, that you three and others like you were so fortunate to be given so much personal mercy by Srila Prabhupada. What is the hope for the rest of us? And I think that's a question that is of prime importance to this whole meeting we're having, and I would like to request that it be answered by a bona fide guru. And Radhanath Goswami has volunteered that tomorrow during his class he will address that question, which I think is a very essential question. How do all devotees, all the devotees, receive the mercy of Srila Prabhupada?
Somebody wrote, "In the early days with Srila Prabhupada, you thought he could do mystical miracles. When you knew he wasn't, how was your view affected?" I would like to correct this question, because we never thought that he wasn't. The very fact that we are sitting here speaking to all of you is proof of his ongoing ability to perform miracles. That one time there was you've probably heard the story, that there was this so-called magician who came. He could do cheap tricks, you know. So he showed Prabhupada his cheap tricks. He made his watch disappear and so many things. And then Prabhupada asked him, "Well, can you make birth, death, disease, and old age disappear?" And the magician admitted he couldn't do that. And Prabhupada smiled. He said, "But I can."
Here's one. "Respected Gurudas Prabhu, would you also like to speak about your Vrindavan days and Hayagriva Prabhu?" Well, that's tomorrow.
Could you please tell what happened with other members of the original group, Mukunda Maharaj, Janaki, Sarasvati? Mukunda Maharaj is in New Zealand, where he's been staying for the last several years, in a retiring mode now, and he's doing some writings of his memoirs about Prabhupada, and I think they're almost finished, someone told me. Janaki, I saw her summer before last in Portland, Oregon. She lives there, and she works in a bank, I believe, or no, she works at the Portland State University. And Saraswati, I just left her in, that's my daughter, our daughter. She is married and lives in Chicago with her very fine husband, and we have two grandchildren about the age she was when she first came to India. So, boy, where will all this time go? I don't feel so old. Do you feel that old?
Sometimes Prabhupada would look at his hands and say, these look so old, but I don't feel like that.
See, one time in Los Angeles, they were taking a walk, and Srila Prabhupada's rooms were on a first floor. So on the return from the walk, one devotee would always sprint up the stairs to open the door. And Prabhupada was observing that, and he said, yes, I feel like doing that, but I cannot. He said, that is the symptom of the soul. The soul is always youthful, even when the body is not.
Here's one. Could you speak some more about Jivanath Prabhu in the early days at Burry Place, ergo Harinam Samkirtan? Well, I just remember seeing him come in the early afternoon, and he had shaven up in the late afternoon. He was so taken, and like Malati Prabhu said, he enthused everybody. He was an amazing soul, always serving, always enthusiastic, never finding fault with anybody, just one of the greatest
devotees.
Remember that
first day he came to the temple? That he followed the Sankirtan party back to Berry Place, and he was a little, you know, he had a little unkempt and untidy, and obviously sort of like a homeless orphan. So they said, no, you can't spend the night here. He had no place to sleep. So they shut the door and locked the door at night, and he slept on the outside on the porch in front of the door at Berry Place, so he would be the first one in the morning. He slept on the ground in front of the door at the temple.
Which is like the classic story about a disciple waiting before the gate to see the guru. This reminds me of one short little anecdote of how Prabhupada's transcendental. He wanted a sign in front of the temple at Berry Place. But the Greater London Council said there's no signs out loud outside. But there was a wrought iron gate in front and then a little space between the wrought iron gate and the temple. So Prabhupada said, this sign is not outside the temple, it's inside the temple. So then the Greater London Council said there's no signs allowed inside the temple. And Prabhupada said, no, this sign is outside the temple.
speaking of signs by the temple, there's another question. Please relate the incident where Prabhupada told that this temple should be dedicated to the untiring efforts of Shyamasundara Das Adhikari. One morning on the way back from a morning walk, Prabhupada, shortly after the temple was finished, he said to the instructor, the temple president, I think it was Dhananjaya, he said, you should put a plaque here. And that's what he dictated that the plaque should read, that this temple is dedicated to the untiring efforts of Shyamasundara Das Adhikari. So they did. They put a brass plaque there. Prabhupada was so, I don't know how to explain it. I guess I was so puffed up that he thought I needed that to
actually, he was appreciative because you gave your heart and soul to build that temple. I mean, actually, we didn't describe so much the interior of the temple in Berry Place, but it was, to this day, remains a unique construction. Some people have described it as like the interior of a boat upside down. But Shyamasundara had brought all this redwood, as you've heard, And he carefully matched each plank one to one to one so that there was a pattern that emerged from, you know, he didn't just slap them up on, you know, he was like carefully matching each plank so that the beautiful, the pattern of the wood would create an effect. And maybe you can explain how you conceived of this unusual design for the interior.
I don't know exactly.
I think you were looking at some books of ancient
cathedrals. It was modeled after in a Buddhist temple in the Ajanta Caves.
Oh, yeah.
But the whole idea is that Prabhupada always liked when his devotees took a natural tendency, a natural talent, and tried to develop it completely for Krishna. And that's all this temple was. He was so appreciative of even the smallest or the biggest things from services from his devotees. He would always make the devotee feel happy that he served Krishna in that way somehow. The plaque, I don't know how to explain.
One of the qualities of Krishna is that he's grateful. And as a devotee of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada also imbibes that quality of gratitude. And so many times in the letters he expressed his gratitude, not just to us, but if you read through Prabhupada's letters, he would express his gratitude to whatever activity, significant or seemingly not significant, that devotee had reported upon. And he was genuinely grateful that somehow or other another conditioned soul had stepped forward to leave the attack of Maya. Mm. There are some questions here regarding, one was regarding the name Radha Landanishwara. So Ishwara, as you know, means controller. So when the deities came, Radha and Krishna, Prabhupada named them Radha Landanishwara. In other words, he was establishing Krishna as the controller of London. And so now we know who's in charge of London. And there was a question regarding what happened to the deity's broken finger. Just like, I will tell you, but you should also consider, it's just like we don't discuss the pastime, you know, of Krishna's departure. We know what happened. We know an arrow apparently pierced his foot by a hunter and he left. But it's not a pastime that is relishable by devotees. We'd rather hear about Krishna chasing the cows along the bank of the river Yamuna. So Radharani appeared to have a slightly broken, damaged finger. And we made arrangements to have an expert person, I think the person came from Scotland, to make the appropriate repair. And actually Prabhupada told us that we should not discuss this ever again. So, because once it was repaired and the deity was installed, there was no consideration that there was any damage. It didn't exist any longer. And the second question was, what should we do when some part of the deity breaks? Well, I mean, basically we shouldn't be breaking our deities. You know, it would depend on the part and the circumstance, you know. I mean, one, I can name two instances where a deity was replaced due to breakage. One in New York, they had a Julin Yatra, and they had small deities. And one of the deities was marble, and the deity went off the swing. He wasn't secured properly, so that deity had to be replaced. Similarly, there's another deity in London, as it were, at Bhaktivedanta Manor. There was Radha Gokulananda and a smaller set of deities that I'd also purchased so that they could be used for bathing ceremonies and festivals. And originally it was black Krishna, marble, and brass Radharani. Now you will see brass Krishna and brass Radharani, because unfortunately somebody in a moment of carelessness knocked small Gokulananda off the altar, and it was a marble floor, so his body being marble, it was broken. And so from that point, the devotees in consultation took a brass deity. But we shouldn't really be thinking in terms of what to do when, if we should really be conscious enough to try to prevent any such breakage from occurring.
A couple of quick questions. What inspired George to donate the money for Krishna book when the lights went out? Well, I don't know. George's, I'm sure, felt the personal intervention of Krishna at that point. I mean, here was a man who had everything in material creation at his fingertips. Wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. George had it all. So when that happened, George just automatically connected it to Krishna, knew that something greater had done that. So there was no question that he should donate the money. Another quick O is, what happened to the money that was transferred and temporarily lost, the $1,500 when we first got there? Prabhupada got it. It eventually arrived. You know the answer to that one?
My dear respected devotees, please tell us about the difficult times in great detail so that we can get conversant and can go through our difficult times and maybe please our guru and perfect our lives. Well, many times Krishna may test us, but that's the time to become strong. Because of the example of Srila Prabhupada, we've been talking about all the austerities he went through and just continued. Even after having a stroke, he continued to want to serve his Guru Maharaj. So sometimes things may be difficult, but that's when your determination should become stronger, because Krishna will test us, but he will never test us so bad that we can't pass the test. And this happens all the time. The other night, I didn't get any sleep, and I didn't want to come here. I was tired, I was grumpy, which is not usual, but I decided that I have to do this for Srila Prabhupada. And so sometimes there'll be a test. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness does not necessarily mean peace of mind. Yoga practices, people are looking for nirvana, samadhi, etc., peace of mind. And that's somewhat self-centered, because like we said, we want the other people to advance. We want to make others happy. So he said, it doesn't necessarily mean peace of mind. Just like the gopis, they were anxious. How can we serve Krishna? How can we serve Krishna? So there will be tests, but that's when we have to become strong. That's when we have to be resolute. That's when we have to be determined and go on. And I'm sure His Grace Radhanath Maharaj may also include that, because he's so inspirational and may have some other things to add to this answer.
Just a quick answer to a simple question here. Somebody asked, where is Srila Prabhupada's Radha Damodar deity now? If you're talking about Srila Prabhupada's small, they were Radha Govinda deities, they were in Calcutta Temple. I don't know if they're still there. If you're talking about Radha Damodar, which were the deities that were in the Radha Damodar party, they are being very gorgeously worshipped at Gita Nagari Farm in Pennsylvania. And one other quick question that they were asking, how did we deal with the invitations that we would receive to different people's homes, to these dignitaries or different type of personalities that we met in London, when probably they were not vegetarian? Well, one way we dealt with it, they'd invite us for dinner, but we'd bring the dinner. We'd bring the prasadam. So we would arrive with our pots and pans and everything else. And, you know, sometimes we had the austerity of having to you know, eat what they would give us, which we generally would try to ask for fruits and keep it simple. But we were really trying to preach, and we didn't want to create barriers between us and people who could help launch this movement, so we didn't behave in a fanatical manner with them. Although I guess bringing our own pots and pans full of prasad might have been considered fanatical, but they loved it, and so did it. It was quite all right.
Did they give you back all of your stuff from this morning? Your pages that you...
No, I'm hoping that'll... Yeah, if anybody knows where the pages are from this morning and this evening, they
can
like, bring system. Them forward.
It's here.
Okay, thanks.
I would like to end with one last question by His Holiness Chandramouli Swami Maharaj.
I think there was more.
There should be some more.
I'd like to ask one question as a clarification of one story. I think I had heard this story from Malati Prabhu. It was in reference to Purushottam and the moon landing about the fire in the kitchen with Mother Palika.
About what?
There was a ghee fire in the kitchen.
Only one?
The stove went on in reference to Purushottam and...
That I don't know about. I only know about the he was disturbed by the moon landing and Prabhupada playing with my daughter. And he referred to both of these situations in a letter to Brahmananda. He didn't, you know, give any other indication.
Okay. Thank you. Dhananjay tells this story.
I'd also like to clarify, if I could. I think Jamuna Devi mentioned about the installation of Radhalan and Ishwar, that when Prabhupada jumped, it was like she never saw him move so fast. Yeah. And she, I don't know if it was through you or Shruti Kirti, that it was described that Prabhupada held Srimati Radharani's hand with one of his hands, and then with the other hand, he held up the
pillar.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. Is that correct? Yeah.
He was there. He was behind the curtain.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, to me, is amazing. Well, with one hand, he was holding
it. Me too. He was like a lion.
We're being flagged by the watch.
It's been a hard day's night.
So we'll take the... See, now the auspicious sound of the microphone is saying that we have to cut it. So we thank you very much for your generous attention.
We'll talk about India tomorrow. The early days in Bombay.
This one we can talk about after, personally. This question that passed to Maharaj, since you won't be here tomorrow. So whoever wrote this, because we're winding up now, we can talk about it personally after class.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.